Hello and welcome, or welcome back to the Quarter Life Queen podcast. And today you are in for such a treat in hearing my conversation with Emily Camerata. And having the conversation in itself blessed me. Being able to listen to it while editing blessed me again. And I'm probably going to have to listen to it like four more times because she is so full of wisdom. I feel like her story is so relatable in so many ways, in different concepts that we talked about, like having plans that don't go to plan and then how you recover from that, how you trust God in the waiting, and also just her testimony, or in other words, how she came to know and trust in God as her savior is truly so beautiful, and I think about it often. So grab a fun drink, do whatever you need to do, and really just give a lot of thoughtful intention into listening to Emily, because there truly is so much to learn from her, and I'm so excited for you all to hear her. Well, welcome to the Quarter Life Queen podcast to Emily Camerata. How are you today?
Hi, I'm so good. I'm so giggly. I'm so sorry. How are you?
I'm great. I'm so excited to be with you. I guess I like to say how we met or how we know each other.
Yeah.
So we probably met about a year ago at our church young adult breakfast, and I remember I thought you were like literally so cool.
Stop. That's and so sweet.
Just kind of had that edge about you, like kind of mysterious, you know, interesting, fun. And I'm then so when we kind of started to actually hang out, I was like, wait, she's kind of quirky.
I was like, I feel like I spent a lot of my life being like, oh, like, I wish I was mysterious, but, like, I just really air out too much of my own business to be mysterious. I feel like that's the quirky side you're describing when we actually, like, started to hang out. You're like, oh, like, she's kind of weird.
Yeah, but I love it. I love it. And you're so fun. But it's interesting because at that time, you were on a very different trajectory in your life than what you are now on a year later. So I want to get there. But to kind of start out, take us back to when you were 19 or 20, and like, where were you at? What was your kind of perspective on life going into your 20s? And yeah.
Oh my gosh. Like I was not a happy 19 or 20 year old. Like, that is just like baseline, like vibes were bad. I was like 19 and 20, like right through like the heat of like the COVID pandemic. Yeah. So vibes were bad for everybody.
Vibes were low.
But, like, I was just, like, not in a good place, like, mentally or spiritually. Like, I just, well, I had grown up, like, surrounded, like, by Christianity, like, by the gospel. But I was just, like, I don't know. I had been pretending for years where I was, like, I just did not really believe. There's a lot. I'm like, girl, like, how deep do you want me to go? I'm like, there's so much I could use to explain that moment. But I was, like, about to go to college, and that was going to be my first non-Christian school, and a part of me was kind of like, yes, like my chance to abandon the faith that I really don't like, which is such a terrible, like, yeah, that like breaks my heart because I love Jesus so much now. Yeah. And I'm like, I cannot believe that there was a part of my life where I was thinking like that, but like that literally was the case. So like when I'm 19 and 20, like I'm like, yes, this is my chance to like go out and do all the things and live the way that like I grew up being told that I would like burn forever for. And
yeah.
I was like, yes, so fun, thriving. And I was like, wait, no, like my soul is like actively like deteriorating. So
yeah.
When I was 19 and 20, like I like there were definitely times where I thought that I was thriving. So I was like, ooh, like living for like, I don't know, everything that the world tells you is gonna make you happy. Like trying to go for like a prestigious career path, like trying to make tons of money, trying to have everyone think that I was beautiful. Like those were the things that genuinely like all of my worth and purpose were in. And like for a while that felt great. And then it didn't, because those things never actually fulfill you.
So. I literally was like, this man, I was like, we are beefing for real. Like, I just like had this whole notion of God in my head that like, I was like, oh, like, I just need to shove him out to, like, truly find freedom, because I viewed God as, like, this tyrant. Because somewhere along the way, like, in my upbringing, I had picked up this idea that, like, if your life was good, God was good, and if your life was bad, God was bad. And, like, obviously I didn't have the hardest life in the world, but, like, a lot of times my life was pretty bad. So I was like, this dude is not it.
Yeah.
That sounds so Gen Z of me, but I'm like, I was like, true freedom is gonna be wherever the sky is not, but like newsflash, he's everywhere, and you're gonna be like, and I found out the hard way that like things that, like, the world, like, sells you is freedom. Like, really, I never felt more bound in my entire life than when I was living for the things that I thought would make me happy, than even when I was, like, having, like, a soulless relationship with, like, religion. Like, when I was just, like, diving headfirst into everything my heart desired, like, it was just, like, debilitating. Like, yeah. I felt so trapped, honestly.
Yeah. So, were you a freshman in college in 2020?
I was, yeah.
Okay. So, I know that that obviously had its difficulties, I remember at WashU, like, that was the rumors that you guys had it a lot tougher than we did.
Which, like, I totally understand. I know that is a really intense, like, topic, but, like, I understand, like, why they made the choices they made.
Right.
But, like,
it still,
like,
sucks.
It was like, you are like, I could either be in my dorm or I could go get a meal. And yeah. I would be kind of, like, cattle prodded out of the dining hall.
Yeah.
Like, that was pretty much it.
Yeah. So, yeah, what were the things that you were kind of doing your freshman, sophomore year of college, as you were kind of exploring your newfound hypothetical freedom?
It was more like, freshman year, since I wasn't, like, meeting a lot of people and I couldn't really go and do anything, it was more like a metaphorical resistance to God. I was charging up to, like, really resist when you could, like, actually go places and do things.
When this pandemic is over, I'm gonna be crazy.
I was like, let me loose underage in a bar when this is over. That was not happening during COVID, but I was like, I literally was like not hyping myself up for that, which is crazy. Like, that thought, I was like, that's what I want to be. That's where I want to be. So I was charging up freshman year, which is so nuts to say. It's so cringe. Like, I just cannot believe that I thought that was, like, the coolest thing ever.
Yeah. But I think, too, that's how a lot of people might feel, like, in high school, like, before they're going to college. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you had a weird circumstance with, you know, a global pandemic and everything. But I think that feeling is very relatable. It's not as cringe as
Thank you. I'm like, I feel like that's just, like, my frontal lobe finally developing. Yeah. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, what was I thinking?
Yeah, I remember being in high school and I went to, like, a party on Halloween. I don't even know. And I don't even know if this is true, but allegedly the cops came. And so everyone ran. And I remember I felt so, like, exhilarated. I thought, I'm so cool.
She's a bad girl.
I was at a party that the cops were at. And so I think when you get a taste of that rebellion, you think about it a lot of, oh, I want to try this. I want to try that because I have the freedom to.
Yeah. So. No, thank you for normalizing that a bit. I've had people in the past tell me, like, hey, like, younger you was just doing the best she could with what she had at the time. And I was like, no, she actually deserves a little bit of heat, so. But yeah, charging up for COVID to be over. And then, like, I guess that it finally started, like, things started to lighten up and, like, life started to go back a little bit to normal when I was a sophomore in college. I was newly single. I rushed a sorority and I was like, I'm, like, a frat rat. Like, this is, like, talking about cringe. Like, I was like, my life is, like, I go to the frat basements every weekend and I drink too many White Claws during my weekdays. I was like, I live to grind. Like, I was like, I live to be, like, just a, you know, A-plus machine, and, like, I'm gonna make so much money someday, and, like, I'm gonna have such a prestigious career, and, like, that's just it. That's my life, is I'm, like, I'm just gonna be rich and beautiful, and that's all that matters.
Yeah.
I tell you what, I was never feeling rich and beautiful, and those were my two goals.
Yeah. So when did it start to change for you?
Oh my gosh. I feel like the best way that I can describe it is it was like a really long process, and it was kind of like almost like whispers where, like, I would be, like, doing things I was doing, you know, like, I'm like, oh, like, I'm talking to a bunch of different guys, and, like, I'm trying to just be, like, beautiful all the time, and I know I'm really, like, making me sound, like, super vapid. I did have some substance at the time, but, like, these were things that I truly did value.
Yeah.
Or, like, partying, whatever, like, blah, blah. And I get these little whispers of, like, oh, like, this doesn't, like, really fulfill me. Or, like, what is my purpose in life? And, like, for a while, like, I could kind of be like, okay, new party. Like, okay, talking to a new guy. Okay, like, promotion in the lab that I was working in. Like, and I could kind of, like, hush up, like, the whispers that I would feel. But then eventually, like, that, like, those messages of, like, wait, this isn't actually fun, or, like, this isn't fulfilling, or, like, what even is your purpose? It got, like, so loud that, like, it felt like my whole life imploded. because like the things that I was trying to get all of my purpose from just like aren't perfect, and they can never make you happy, and they can give you little bursts of like, you know, like happiness or like dopamine even, like, but and then like you realize that like none of these things actually matter. Like I would have a moment where like this person that I like idolized in my career path, like, and she was like my goal of like who I wanted to be, like actually like getting to know her and like finding out like that her life wasn't perfect. Yeah. I was like, what do you mean? You have all these things that I thought would make my life perfect, and how is your life not perfect? Or like so stupid, like another situationship with a guy who genuinely didn't care whether I lived or died. Like that's just like these things, like they just crack, you know, because they're so imperfect. Yes. And they were never like you were never meant to get your purpose from them. And I found that out the hard way. And I just remember waking up one day and I was like, so my life is actually meaningless.
Yeah.
I was like, none of these things that I'm doing matter. They're actually actively hurting me.
Yeah.
And I like literally can't do this anymore. And I just fell into like such a deep depression, like the worst of my entire life. And it wasn't until I absolutely hit rock bottom that I actually opened my ear to the possibility that like God might be real, God might love me, and that there's a better life for me out there than what I've been living in.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I experienced something so similar because I also had a party girl era my freshman and sophomore year of college.
Yes.
And I think what you're saying is so true, that you feel the thing that you're searching for slip a little bit, or you see it for what it really is, but you've put so much of your identity or your worth or your expectations in it that there's that fear of, no, like, that can't be it.
No.
Like, I have to find the next thing. Like, I have to talk to the next person, or I have to, you know, reach this next milestone, because that can't be it, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember being in, like, a dorm room, and it was during recruitment, so we weren't allowed to, like, go out to the bars. So we were in this, like, dorm room. It was a guy's room, and it had those gross, like, LED lights that guys have. It was, like, dark, and there's, like, vape, like, smoke everywhere. And I just remember, like, looking around and, like, feeling really uncomfortable and just, like, kind of wanting to leave. And I kept trying to make eye contact with, like, a friend and maybe try and leave. And it just felt like everybody was looking through me. And it was just such this strange experience of, okay, wow. Like, all this stuff really is just vapors. And that's what, like, Ecclesiastes talks about, and, like, striving after wind. Like, just meaningless. And I think to actually sit with that reality is really difficult. We just try to distract ourselves and pretend that's not how we're really feeling.
Yeah.
But I think accepting that is the first step to creating a life that is meaningful and that is filled with purpose. So so you're at rock bottom. Like, is your first thought, well, I guess maybe God's real? Or, like, how did you make that transition?
Girl, do you want the real, like, raw, unfiltered version?
Yes.
Okay. This is a story I don't fully tell people often, because I'm like, like, I really enjoy people seeing me as, like, upbeat and, like, fun. Like, ew, I wasn't depressed. Like, no way. Like, even though that's such a normal thing, but, like, I feel like, I don't know, sometimes vulnerability can feel really icky, and I'm like, ugh. But this is me trying to step out of that at the moment, and there's nothing wrong with those feelings, and that's just a part of life. And I'm getting to a point where I really see the beauty in, like, God allowing me to experience that sort of despair.
Yeah.
Because it's what finally broke my pride to bring me to Him.
Yeah.
Which I needed that so desperately. Because I truly believe, like, if I had not thought that there was, like, no other option, like, I wouldn't have been able to, like, build, like, to, like, open myself to allow, like, the Holy Spirit to work in me and, like, build up the faith that, like, He's worked in me up until this point. So the real raw version is that I ended up getting so depressed and bitter that I was like, you know what, maybe I will pray again. And it was literally just so I could, like, be mean and sassy to God. Like,
yeah.
I literally was like,
hey, it's been a while, but
yeah. I was like, long time no see. Like, it was actually just, like, ridiculous. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, what a testament to, like, God's grace and mercy that He was just like, I'm so happy to hear from you, even when you're literally talking to me like, you know, a petulant teenager. Anyways, I was like, because I mentioned before, like, the whole mindset of, like, you know, like, if life is good, God is good, and if life is bad, God is bad. And I was like, I truly believe, I was like, God, you created me to torment me. Mm. Like, I just don't understand, like, how anyone can ever see you as loving, because, like, if you loved me, you would never let me experience this kind of suffering. Like,
yeah.
Why have I been through everything that I've been through if you actually care about me? Like, this is just ridiculous. And then I was so depressed, I got to the point where I was like, I put it in such a frank way, so I'm sorry if that does not land with you or whoever ends up listening to this. But I think I'm gonna speak very frankly about some very dark stuff, but I was just like, God, like, if this is the life that you created me to live, like, I'm just not gonna live it. Like, take that. Yeah. Like, I'm just not. Like, I will literally take measures to make sure that I die if this is what living means. Mm-hmm. Living with you means. And so basically, I made up my mind. I was like, okay, things aren't getting any better. Like, I literally would wake up every day and I would, like, sob because I was like, I literally would pray to God before bed. I was like, kill me in my sleep. Mm-hmm. And I would wake up and I'd be like, bro, like, I'm still alive. Like, mm-hmm. It was just like insane. And I had never felt this great like that in my entire life. And then so one day I was like, okay, whatever. Like, if you're not gonna do it, I will. And so I was like, I'll say goodbye to God. Because I was like, oh, I'm gonna go to church one last time. Because that was my entire upbringing. Like, I grew up in the church. I went to Christian school up until college. Like, you know, it was still like a comfort to me because that was all I'd ever known.
It's familiar.
Yeah, it's familiar. I was like, I'll go to church one last time, and then, like, I'm peacing out. Like, I've had, like, again, sorry to put it in such blunt terms, and I was like, I've truly had enough. And so I texted one of my really good friends, one of my sorority sisters, and I was like, hey, girl, like, I know you go to church. Can I come with you this weekend? And I, like, framed it in such a way because, again, like, I had even more of an issue with vulnerability then than I do now, but I was like, my poor friend thought that she was, like, having this amazing opportunity of evangelism, and I was like, joke's on you, I'm literally, like, peacing out after this. Like, I'm only coming here. And she was like, you know, she's so sweet, and she was, like, telling me about, like, God and everything, and I was just kind of, like, tuning her out, like, the whole way there. Then I actually get there, and I walk into the sanctuary of the church that I went to, and I was just like, bro, what is this? Like, I was so taken aback by, like, what I saw when I walked into worship that, like, for a second, I, like, forgot about my own misery because I was so puzzled by what I was looking around at. Like, I had never been in a church where, like, I felt like people were really happy to be there.
Yeah.
Like, and I was, like, so confused.
Was it one family?
It was one family.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
So I walked in, I was like, oh, I was like, hello, what is this? Like, people are, like, arms outstretched, people are crying, like, they, like, even people that, you know, like, aren't as, like, charismatic of a worshiper, like,
yeah,
they, like, are still, like, you can tell even people that are, like, standing, like, stiff as a board, or, like, you can just feel, like, how moved they are, like, yeah, in the spirit, like, by God's presence. I've never felt God's presence so tangibly like that in my entire life, and I was, like, literally, what is going, like, I was so confused, like, I literally, like, it was probably the least pain that I had felt in, like, months because I was just so confused by what was going on. And I was so confused that I was like, oh, like, I'll, like, pray to God, like, you know, just, like, in my own mind, like, I'm like, God, is it you? Like, I just, like, prayed that in my head. And for the first time in my life, I grew up in a cessationist congregation, so, like, God doesn't speak, like, no miracles, like, whatnot.
Yeah,
anyone, like, you know, like, no hate, if that is your theological truth, like, yeah, no hate.
I'm in my continuous era.
Yeah, so. I am firmly in my continuous era because of this moment. So, like, I didn't even think that was a possibility. And so I prayed that prayer in my head, and I was like, God, like, is it you? And I literally, for the first time in my life, heard the audible voice of God say, you can't leave, it's not time. And I was just like, literally, like, it felt like in the most loving, respectful way, God had just, like, grabbed me by the throat. It was like, this nonsense needs to end now. Like literally didn't even answer, like, is it you? It was just like, stop. And I just was like, literally, like, jaw on the floor. And I just had tears, like, streaming down my face. Like,
yeah.
Like, just tears. And I literally, like, had my mouth open. And, like, my poor friend was like, man, she's really feeling the spirit. Because I was like, I had, like, drool coming out of my mouth, bro. Like, I also, that day, I was wearing a cream sweater. I had a coffee from, like, the church cafe, spilled it all over my sweater, didn't even notice because I was just so, like, hot up in God's presence. Like, I walked out of there, like, I'm, like, literally covered in coffee and snot and tears and spit, and I was just like, what just, and there was a brief moment where I was like, am I having, like, an acute psychotic break? I was like, what? I was like, are things that bad? But I just, like, It was like a split second. It was almost like a joke thought in my head because I was so, I'd never experienced anything like that. I was just like so sure that God had spoken to me despite never believing for a day in my life that that was a possibility. Wow. And then it was like this miraculous moment where like I walked out of there and like I didn't want to take my life anymore. Wow. I wasn't depressed anymore. And I was just like, yeah, it was amazing. And I literally like, I went home. I still had a Bible somewhere. I literally went and found like a storage bin in my dorm room that I like had thrown a couple belongings in. There was a Bible at the bottom that like my brother had encouraged me to get. Like, God bless him. Like, he, it is like his fervent prayers are like, I firmly believe are part of the reason that I came to faith, because when I was like going crazy, like my freshman sophomore year, like my brother had come to faith like a little bit before that, and he was like, you know, like getting me a Bible, like telling me to like not give up, and like, you know, like God is good, and I'd be like, literally shut up. But it was the Bible that he had encouraged me to get that was the one that I reached for, and like I just had a complete 180 life change. Like, I had actually a part of my process of realizing that things in the world were not fulfilling me was I had stopped drinking before I became a Christian, which I feel like this is a little bit random, but it's an interesting part of my story, because I was like, oh, I feel like this is kind of killing me, you know, like been drinking every weekend. So like I had already stopped doing that, but like I stopped even like going sober to parties with my friends, like because it was just a personal conviction that I had at the time. And then like I started going to campus ministry, I started going to church all the time. I had lived by the church at the time, so I literally walked by myself, and I just like dove head first into like having a relationship with Jesus, even though I like didn't totally know what I was doing.
Yeah. Wow. Well, first of all, thank you for sharing that, because I'm sure it is hard and scary to like think back to where you were at during that time. Yeah. But I also hope it's an opportunity for you to see God's faithfulness through that. And the reality is it's a lot of people's stories. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, just being willing to share that is so special. And it's just like so amazing to think of how God truly had his eyes on you the entire time and was protecting you and, you know, was being sure to just be there for you so that no harm would like come against you, even if that was coming from yourself. So that is so special. And you kind of started to touch on this, but I think that, you know, as a Christian, you can encourage someone to have that moment where they, I guess a salvation moment is what you could say, or maybe somebody's experienced that for themselves. But truly following Jesus is discipleship, and it's the walk after that big moment. So, and that's where a lot of people get confused or lost. I know for me, like, growing up, I would like go to church camps and stuff, and I would feel that like excitement or that high or that hope that like God is real and God is out there. But then as you kind of get back to your normal life and you have to deconstruct some of the patterns or the things that are a part of your day-to-day, that's where it gets a little confusing and lost. So how did you kind of keep your endurance, like, after that moment into, like, honestly, where you are now?
Yeah, honestly, it was so hard. I'm so glad that you asked me that and, like, brought that up in your own experience, because I feel like that's, like you said, like, that's where I feel like we lose so many, like, people, like, new believers, when they have an encounter with God. And, like, sometimes I think we can, like, set it up that, like, oh, like, everything's just gonna be awesome, like, things are gonna be amazing, and, like, a lot of times it's not. Like, I felt a lot of shame for a long time about my testimony, because, like, it was this beautiful, miraculous moment where God healed me of my desire in my life, and he healed me of the depressive episode that I was in, but, like, I can't, like, I couldn't sit here and tell you the truth and be, like, oh, yeah, I was never depressed again after that, or, oh, I was never anxious again. Like, like, God took it away in that moment, because in his infinite wisdom, he knew that that was what he needed to do to bring me to faith. But I think, again, obviously, I don't know all the inner workings of the Lord's mind. His thoughts are so much higher than ours. But what I've come to understand, at least about my relationship with him in particular, it's so weird to, like, say this, but I have, like, a deep appreciation for and almost, like a desire to see beauty in the fact that I, like, still have continued to, like, struggle with depressive episodes and, like, my mental health since the moment where I was saved. Because, like, my life has been, like, it has not been perfect. Like, you know, like, my life has still been bad in many of the same ways that it was before I was a believer. It's just, I understand God so much differently now.
Yeah.
Like, something that has been really huge for me is, like, the notion that Jesus knows suffering better than any other being on the planet. And, like, it's not, like, I always saw God as this, like, far off, like, impersonal, like I said before, tyrant that just wanted me to feel pain. And I was like, no, like, Jesus weeps with us.
Yeah.
Like, Jesus did weep with us. He still does today. And, like, he went through the absolute worst pain imaginable. He bore the full wrath of God in unimaginable physical torture for us. Like, it's not like God is so impersonal that he doesn't understand what it's like to hurt. He frankly knows what it's like to hurt better than most people do.
Yeah.
So that really shifted my perspective. And, like, oh, like, when I suffer, I can't remember the Peters. I can't remember. I'm
one of the Peters.
The Lord, I was like, God can help me remember the words, but never the book and the numbers. Which I guess is the important thing. I'm like, you know, praise God for Google and all the beauty of modern technology. It's like, hey Siri, can you find this? Sorry.
Yeah.
Anyways. It talks about, like, taking joy in suffering because it makes us more like Christ. Because, which is, like, even if it's, like, really, that's a really tough sell.
Yeah.
To be, like, no, like, take joy. But, like, I truly have found that, like, in my walk with Jesus. And, like, so I have that whole new perspective on suffering. But then also, like, again, like, in the moment, these experiences are so bad. But I have, like, a really, like, acute, like, horrible depressive episode. Oh my God, like, why? Like, the moment, it never feels good. But I've noticed for, like, the ways that, like, the being able to just, like, go to God in prayer or, like, open up my Bible when I go through suffering has completely, like, changed the game for me.
Yeah.
Like, it might not make me feel better at all in the moment, but, like, just over time, like, the trust that gets built in my relationship with God, like, through those moments, it's invaluable. Like, I've never experienced anything like that. I have, like, this security in God that I would have never had if God had just allowed my life to be perfect.
Yeah.
Or he had allowed my mental health to be completely healed after the first time that he, like, you know, that I, like, reached back out when he was reaching out to me. I don't know. So I think about it in a really oddly fond way. I like I like to write about all the different experiences that I've had, like, with my mental health and, like, with God. And, like, there hasn't been a single moment of my life where I have been suffering that God has not absolutely been there holding me.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know. It's just, I feel like knowing God, like, truly getting to the Word and, like, actually getting to know God as, like, a friend and a father and as my shepherd, like, that has completely changed the way that I view suffering, like, the ups and downs. Because I feel like that sometimes, like we were saying earlier, like, that's the misconception, is that, like, you're not going to have any more ups and downs because you have God.
Yeah.
It's like, no, like, you know, somebody said recently, I saw it, must have been on Instagram or TikTok somewhere, where it's like, God doesn't promise you a storm-free life, but a storm-proof life.
Yeah.
Like, or it's like, you are going to experience the storms, but, like, you're held by the person who has the power to stop them.
Yeah.
And, like, like, and even, you're gonna experience them, but, like, you're experiencing them with God.
Yeah.
Which, again, probably, like, it's really hard. Like, I heard that so many times growing up, and I was like, literally, shut up. Like, that doesn't make any sense. But, like, I'm telling you from the other side. Like, it really does change things.
But it's interesting, because that was, like, your number one problem with God was, like, how can you be real if there is suffering in the world, if there is cruelty in the world, and if this has happened to me personally? And, like, the principle hasn't changed. Like, there still is suffering in the world, there still is evil in the world, but your perspective changed in the sense of, oh, this isn't God inflicting this upon me. This is the sinful, broken, fallen world that we live in, but he has come and he has sent his son to endure it with us and to be there with us and to, you know, be at our house and start boarding up the windows for when the storm comes, because he wants to protect us and he wants to keep us safe. And so I just always think that's really fascinating, of, like, the problem that you had didn't really change. Like, the problem remains.
Yeah, the problem was
but
still
your
here.
Like, your reconciliation or your solution to the problem is what was redeemed and what restored, like, your relationship fully to God, which is so special.
Yeah. It's like, Susie, you're such a gift. It was such a beautiful tracing of the thread of, like, words that I just, like, spilled out to you. That was Susie, you're so gifted. That's exactly it. It's like, it is the exact same problem, but, like, God changed my heart towards him and towards life so much. And I think that's, again, like, a part of my appreciation for the suffering that I went through was, like,
my pride had to be broken so I could let go of the idea that I know everything.
Yeah.
And, like, in that moment of surrender, it was, like, I had to, because figuring things out on my own had gone so poorly, I had to open myself up to the possibility that, like, I might not know everything and I might not have everything figured out and, like, my heart might not be the thing that I can trust to lead me to a good life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's...
Yeah.
How I ended up there.
That's so good. I was just reading The Prodigal Son in Luke 15, and that's a story that people are very familiar with, mm-hmm. and you've heard it in Sunday school, like, 4,000 times. But something that I noticed this, like, most recent time that I read it is that, you know, the son runs out of money, but then there's also a famine in the land. And so him running out of money, like, that's on him. That's his fault.
Yeah.
But, like, I kind of associate, like, famine or weather, especially in, like, a biblical context, with, like, the sovereignty of God. Because that's obviously something that he's in control of that we're not. And so I think that with what you're saying of these times in your life where you do feel, like, your anxiety or depression kind of, like, you're wrestling with that, like, that's an opportunity for the, like, that you're running back to the Lord. Like, God, mm-hmm. in the scripture, like, God used that famine to encourage the son to go back home to his father. He didn't inflict it just so that he would do that, but used it for that. And so I think in the same way that God can use our struggle or use these kind of external things that come at us in our life to encourage us to go back to him over and over again. Because the reality is that, like, if you were, like, completely healed of depression, which that does happen and that is amazing, but for you personally, that might not, like, that might make you feel like you don't need God anymore, you know? And so God uses these things in our life to continue to encourage us to run back to him and to be with him, which is so special.
Yeah.
But
it keeps us humble enough to realize that.
Yes,
God.
That's a great way to
I also, like, very related, I think about the scripture where Paul talks about, like, the thorn in his side and he's pleaded with God to get rid of it. Like, I have, like, spent hours, like, on my knees pleading with God, like, God, heal my mind. Like, this is horrible. But, like, you know, God responds by saying, like, my grace is sufficient for you. Like, my grace is sufficient in your weakness. And I'm like, that's, because, like, exactly what you're saying. I'm like, I think if I had been completely healed, like, just knowing me and, like, my own heart and, like, my own struggles with my flesh, I'm like, that was the whole thing, is, like, given the chance to leave God when I was 19, I was like, absolutely, I can do this by myself.
Yeah.
And so that's, I don't know, another appreciation I have. Again, it's so weird to have, like, it must sound crazy to be like, oh, appreciation for the suffering that I've endured personally is, like, it does keep me relying on God. And
yeah, it's beautiful.
That is my heart. Like, that can be, like, my flesh or my heart. Like, a lot of the times it's to be like, I don't need God, I can do this on my own. Like, I feel like that's also kind of my personality type, because I'm very, like, I don't know, I'm, like, a type A, like, independent, like, go-getter kind of gal. And, like, that's where my heart leans. It's like, I can do this without God. But it's those types of experiences, like you're saying, like, just push me back to the Lord and remind me that I'm, like, completely and utterly dependent on him.
Yeah. That's so good. And you did mention some practical steps when it comes to navigating those times in mental health struggles of, you know, reading scripture, being in prayer. But do you have any other, like, practical advice for a person that struggles with their mental health and kind of how to engage their faith or how to come out of some of those times?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind, so it's actually a piece of advice that I had gotten from a secular therapist before I became a Christian, but I think I can apply it to a walk with God in a way that has been helpful for me and might be helpful for someone else that's, like, you know, struggling with their mental health, like, as a Christian. But this therapist, she said, like, caring for your mental health, like, it shouldn't start when the house is on fire. Like, you know, like, you know, it's kind of like you should have, like, a fire safety evacuation plan, like, before the fire, you know, like, you should know what to do before catastrophe, right? And I feel like that's kind of how it is, especially as someone who struggles with their mental health. My relationship with God is, like, is that persistent pursuit of God and, like, really denying my flesh. I'm like, there's a lot of times when I, like, go to prayer, like, I go to, like, my prayer group at church, or I open my Bible, or I'm like, I actually really don't want to do this right now. Like, my flesh is, like, screaming, like, open TikTok, like, go get a snack, like, literally do anything but, like, bro, like, I, for real, fighting my flesh is so hard, but, like, just doing it, and being, like, no, like, I'm not, like,
Which is, I know that sounds like kind of brutal, but it's like, no, like developing that routine and that consistency. And again, like, it's never gonna be perfect because we're not perfect. Like, I'm certainly not perfect, but like, basically taking those steps to care for myself spiritually by going to God and carving out time for Him as a routine and not just like falling to my knees in, which again, fall to your knees in prayer when you're in times of desperation. That is exactly what we should do. But like, yeah, you know, like I want to be on my knees in prayer on the daily, so it's not something that I'm like I don't know what I'm doing, yeah, when the time comes. It's like, I feel like the, I don't know, like a part of what made those time, I guess, like almost soften the blow of some of my rougher mental health times is like, I don't know, for me, like some of my like really acute episodes of despair, like during my depressive episodes, are like debilitating. Like I literally have to stop what I'm doing, like panic attack, like I don't know if you've ever experienced anything like this, but like it's literally like my whole system shuts down. Like I literally can't do anything, and like I kind of just have to wait for it to pass. Like I literally am curled up in a ball waiting for it to pass. And it's like, I have to have that like mental routine of like, I literally have enough time to be like, God help me, and then like system goes down.
Yeah.
And then I have to come back and like my, I'm so like, from my brief semester in counseling school, I can tell you that when you're having like a really acute, like stressful experience like that, like a panic attack or something, my professors would call it like lizard brain. Like you literally go back to like the most primal part of yourself.
Oh, interesting.
And like you don't have a lot of access to like reasoning and like all that kind of stuff. So you're operating on like very like bare bones, like almost like human animal vibes, okay? And so in my experiences like that, like it's that, like it's like memorizing scripture, it's having that consistent prayer. Like I can't come up with my own words to pray. Like I'm literally going based off something I memorized.
That's so good.
Like it's, yeah, I have to have that routine because sometimes my like mental health can be so severe that I lose access to that like,
yeah,
higher reasoning capacity. So long explanation, but my,
no,
answer,
that's
like,
so helpful,
you know, like come up with like, build that routine so you're not just like reaching for the Lord,
yeah,
when the house is on fire.
And since you opened the door, so,
oh my gosh, yes.
You know, you studied psychology at WashU, which is fabulous. And then was that always your plan to go into counseling, or was it kind of something that came about after?
Oh my gosh. No, I was a little bit of a major hopper. Like when I first got to college, my fun fact is I actually started in business school at WashU.
Yes, girl.
Which like anyone I feel like who spends a lot of time around me is like, girl, what? Like I was like, I don't know. Like business is competitive, and like the business school was super competitive, and like sometimes I would literally weep because I was like, if someone wins, then someone has to lose. I was like, I know that like God was like, girl, what are you doing? We're gonna correct this course later, but like you have.
I can't imagine you as like a CFO.
No, I weep when the flowers bloom. Like I can't, like respectfully, like, you know, like power to like all the business people out there, but that is just like not my gifting, not my grind.
Yeah.
So, psychology was not always the plan. Counseling was something I had decided on because I'd been told like very frequently in my life that oh, you're such a good listener, you should be a therapist. But I was kind of like, no, I don't know if I want to do that. Like, especially like before I became a Christian, I was like, I don't know, I feel like I could make more money elsewhere. Like, I was like, no, I'm going to be like an attorney, like,
yeah,
surgeon, astronaut Barbie. Like, I'm not
right.
Doing that.
Right.
But like, I had kind of heard like whispers of that throughout my life that I just kind of rejected. Like, despite like kind of picking up, like, I think that is a gifting that God has given me. And so I really like, I prayed a lot about it. I was like, I think I should go like become like a Christian counselor. Like that, I was like, I think that's gonna be my path. And I was like, oh, it sounds so great. Like I was about to get engaged at the time. Like, you know, my husband is, you know, he works in ministry, he preaches on occasion, you know, that's his dream, he loves to preach, that's his like gifting and call. And to pastor, he's just great. I'm not gonna turn this into a soapbox about my husband. But like that's his call. I'm like, oh, doesn't that sound so great? Like, you know, pastor, husband, like counselor, wife, like, so I did kind of.
I actually feel like I know so many couples that are like that.
Right? Like, it is, I mean, it's a great duo. That's so much, that is so much of pastoring, is like listening to people, and like, it helps you care for them properly when you use, like, you know, like the goodness of that, like, you know, like general revelation that God has given just the world as a whole of like how to like properly care for like the minds that He's built for us. So like that's a great thing, and I was like, oh, that sounds great. So like my brain was a little clouded with that, but I do truly believe that, like, you know, it did happen. Like God sent me there for a reason. And then the more that I got into my counseling program, I was like, I actually really don't fit in here. Yeah. And I was like, I'm having a really hard time adjusting, and I actually not only is it like, oh, I don't know if the program's a great fit for me, I was like, I don't know if this career is a good fit for me. I was like, I would get some like feedback in like my practice counseling sessions where I guess I just had this like gross misunderstanding of like counseling, where I was like, oh, like I'm like a, like I said before, like I'm a, you know, like go-getter, like type A type of person. I'm like, that's who's gonna come into my office. It's like people who come in because they want to be better. I was like, why else would you come to a counselor? And then this sounds so like, oh my gosh, like girl, did you even like talk to a therapist before you like went into counseling school? But like, I promise, like this was a very well thought out decision. It wasn't until like I literally got into like the nitty gritty of practice that I came to understand that like the dynamic between like a counselor and a lot of people that come in their room is like not, you know, like a lot of it's just like, I want to be heard for the first time. Yeah. And it's a really beautiful thing, but I started to realize that that wasn't quite where my gifting was. Like I kind of wanted, I feel like I kind of have like, I'm a like a pretty motivated person. I want like to motivate people, and like there's not always a place for that in the counseling room. So people just, they need to, it's the proper thing for them to do, is to just sit with their pain instead of take it somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's a really hard thing for me to wrap my brain around.
Yeah.
And so yeah, I just, through a lot of prayer and hard conversations and crying to my, you know, then fiance on like every time when I would leave class, like I started to realize, I was like, this is not where I'm supposed to be. And that was really hard because I was like, oh my gosh, doesn't that sound so good? Doesn't that plan for my life sound so good? You know, being a counselor and, you know, my husband being a pastor and like a church worker. And I had to kind of let go of that. And it was this really big like unraveling of like my own pride and like what I think my life is gonna look like, because I'm again, I've said it like what, this is like the third or fourth time now. Like I'm a planner, like very type A person. I'm like, this is how my life is gonna look. Like I have a, like if God is like sitting in a desk chair, like writing the story of my life, I am like a monkey on his back trying to steal the pen from him while he's writing. I just am like, no, this would look so much better.
Yeah.
So I went through like a really like rough period where I was like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I was like, what is my purpose in life? Like, I was like, I thought that was like my calling. And like, I truly do believe, like even like right now as I'm speaking, that like counseling is like a gifting that the Lord has given me, but it's just not something that I'm going to use in a formal setting. It's something that's going to be more interpersonal.
Yeah, I think that's so good. And I think that there, a lot of people go through that experience of being in school, being in a major, and realizing that it's not working, or even a job.
Yeah.
But a lot of people find comfort in knowing what the next step is going to be. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so real and so helpful that you can speak to having to walk away from something and not knowing what your next step is going to be or what it was going to look like. And I think that, you know, you just said something powerful of the gift that you feel like you had, it wasn't going to apply in that setting, but spoiler alert, you're going to be a teacher.
Yeah.
But we can get there. But I think as a teacher, counseling is something that is like an inherent part of the job.
Yeah.
Because like there were so many times, I remember my fourth grade teacher like passed me a note and was like, do you want to have lunch with me, girl? Because I was struggling because my crush like asked me to be his girlfriend in fourth grade, and then I had strep throat and he had a new girlfriend when I got back to school, and it was traumatic. And my fourth grade teacher was so amazing, and we had lunch, and she just like listened to me and talked to me, and that's very, those are the same, you know, characteristics that you would look for in a counselor, but it looked very different, and it was like so helpful for me. So I hope that one day you can save a young brokenhearted 10-year-old.
Oh my gosh,
such as me. But yeah, so anyway, what did it look like to kind of step out in faith of not knowing what you were doing next, but knowing that you needed to get away from what you were doing?
It looked, sorry, your first grade teacher sounds wonderful.
I love her. She's like my favorite teacher.
That is a darling story. I'm so sorry that happened to you, but also like,
you know what? I'm brave.
You are brave.
I got
through. You're a survivor.
Yeah, I'm a survivor. So,
okay, wait, back to your question. Sorry, I was like, I just had to comment on that because that was
So sweet.
But also, like, dang, like, you can't be out that long a short term. Okay, I'm done.
It was, like, 2-3 days. Like, come on, man. Like,
yeah, no object permanence there, for real.
Yeah.
Anyways,
knowing that you shouldn't be doing what you were doing, but not knowing what you're going to do next.
Oh, TBH, super brutal. Like, I can't even lie to you. Like, Susie, you were in the small group I was leading at church when this was happening.
Yeah.
I just had to introduce myself as, like, I don't know what I'm doing with my life.
Yeah.
Hi, my name's Emily, and I don't know
what I'm doing. It's so, because as, like, a young adult group, it is, I guess, effective to know if you're in school or if you're working. But I feel like the question's always, like, what's your name and what do you do? You're like, well, I'm Emily.
Like, I'm Emily, and I don't have an answer to this kind of question. Like, it was so hard, because I also, like, you know, like coming from, like, the environment that, like, WashU was at, like, achievement,
yeah,
and, like, especially what I described, like, before I became a Christian, like, achievement and, like, what I can do and what I can produce is, like, an idol of, like, where I place my identity that I still wrestle with, like, to
yeah.
this day, like, still wrestle with it. So that was, like, a horrendously humbling experience that I so desperately needed. So, like, I remember, like, well, I had been talking about, like, ooh, like, I don't know if this is the place for me, like, privately with Jackson, my husband, like, I think, like, a month into school. Like, it was, like, ridiculously early or something like that.
Yeah.
But then, like, I had kind of started to soft launch, like, quitting, like, to, like, Jackson, like, other close people in my life, and I've been praying about it, and God was like, yeah, like, I felt like God was telling me, like, this is the right move for you,
yeah.
To be going, and I was like, awesome, I will get back to you as soon as I figure out what I'm doing next. And I just remember there was a day where, like, it was literally, like, it was just the most peculiar thing, because I have no, like, ill will to the place that I was attending. Like, it's a beautiful place, and people have wonderful experiences there, and it is just amazing. But, like, my spirit would feel so heavy, like, when
yeah.
I would go to class. And I remember one day it was just, like, so heavy, and I felt so miserable. And I just had this thought, and I felt like it was the Holy Spirit speaking to me, telling me, like, this is the last time you will attend class. And I was like, a part of me was like, yes, like, woo, like, you know, like, this is the right move. And then a part of me was like, but I don't have a backup.
Yeah.
And I happened to be, like, extraordinarily privileged at the time to be living with my dad and, you know, to have him to, like, help take care of me. And it wasn't, like, a life or death financial mm-hmm. situation if I didn't have a plan when I left. Like, God really provided, like, for me through my dad and that. But yeah, I literally walked out of that class at the end of it. You know, I didn't get up and leave or anything dramatic like that.
That would have been epic.
That would have been nuts if I just, like, slammed my laptop closed and my
yeah.
class. It was a great class. Like, I am kind of bummed that I never finished it. But I just, like, got up after the class ended, and I was like, all right, that's it. Like, I'm going home, and I'm not coming back. And
yeah.
it was the last time I stepped foot on campus.
That's wild.
It was crazy. And I just was, it, yeah, it did, it really did not feel good. And God really forced me to confront all of the bit of, like, my identity that I still was putting
yeah.
in what I was doing, and, like, having to, like, introduce myself to people and be like, yeah, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And it was really humbling.
Yeah, I think that's so real, because I remember in my sorority, it was kind of a tradition that the seniors would have a chapter that was themed around being a senior, I guess.
Yeah.
And they would put your picture on a slideshow with,
mm-hmm.
like, your post-college plans.
Yeah.
And that was, like, the thorn in my side. Like, I, like, was so anxious about that when I was looking for a job after, like, my senior year of college, because I needed my slide to have something cool. Like,
that's so real.
I was freaking out. And I feel like that's what prevents a lot of people from doing what they think is the right thing, because of the optics of it, you know.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure it was difficult being in a small group and not having a job or a school or something that you're associated with. And
yeah.
but then I remember at the chapter, I actually had gotten a job at that point, so yay.
Your slide was
but,
I'm sure.
Yeah, it was literally like goals. But there were so many girls that they were like, don't know, or like still looking for a job, or, and it just wasn't a big deal. Like, it was not a big deal. And I just, like, put so much pressure on myself to have something to say, and it literally was just not a big deal. And I'm sure no one thinks about the senior slideshow at all to this day. And I do think that, you know, sometimes God is going to ask you to wait. And you did. And he, like, that wasn't for nothing. Now you, like, you have clear direction of what you're going to do. Yeah. And it's probably going to be great. If not, great. You'll wait again. But there's nothing wrong with not knowing the next step, even though I feel like there's so much pressure, like, especially when you're in, like, a transitional season to, like, have something to say, you know?
Right. To, like, you know, to have... That's such a good illustration, like, this... Because my sorority did that, too, of, like, you gotta have your slide. And I remember being like, yeah, I'm gonna be a counselor. My husband's gonna be a pastor.
Yeah.
Even to, like, a group that was, like, mostly non-believers, like, that like, still sounded good.
Yeah.
Like, they were like, oh, cute. I'd be like, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty cute.
Yes.
Only for, like, you know, God to see my pride and be like, hey, girl. Snatch
yeah.
it back.
Yeah.
Which I needed that. And that, I think what you're saying, like, that, like, oh, like, not knowing the next step, that was, I feel like, so key to me even figuring out what I was going to do next.
Yeah.
Because now that I do have, like, the clarity of, like, you know, spoiler alert, like, I am a teacher now, like, and that, like, a teaching, and, like, teaching is, like, a dream for me. Like, it's something that I've always had in the back of my mind, and... this was just, like, the perfect time, like, in my life to, like, actually, like, go pursue it. And I'm, like, literally so excited. I'm, like, oh, my gosh, like, I just know I'm going to be so excited to go to work every day. Like,
yeah.
I just, like, it's something that I've thought about literally forever, but I, like, never had the courage to just, like, go for it.
Yeah.
And now I am. But, like, I think the difference with, like, oh, like, yeah, I prayed about it, now I have a career path. Because, like, yeah, I prayed about it, and I had a path before, and that was
yeah.
a path that didn't last. Now I have to go into it with the humility of, like, okay, like, this is where God is taking me right now. I cannot have the hubris of believing that this is where I'm going to be forever
yeah.
or that I'm, or maybe I might be there forever. Like, I can't have the pride of thinking I know exactly how the rest of my career and life is going to unfold.
Yeah.
So I'm like,
and thank God.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Praise
you know, because how boring, like, life would that be if you just knew what every single day was
right.
going to hold? And I'm a pretty type A person too, so I love to plan. I actually enjoy knowing what every day holds, especially like when it comes to the week or everything. But God is just so unconfined by our expectations
mm-hmm.
and by our experiences and by our opportunities, and He places you in specific places and specific seasons for a purpose. And I remember somebody at my internship last summer said that, you know, God always puts you in a place because that place has something that you need and you have something that that place needs. It's kind of
mm-hmm.
like a mutual connection. And I think that's so true. Even, like, it might be tempting for you to think, like, oh, my time in grad school is wasted because I'm not
yeah.
doing anything with it. And, you know, maybe there won't be anything that you can tangibly understand now,
mm-hmm.
but I'm sure one day in heaven, God will be like, oh, actually,
yeah.
remember that one time, like, I actually was doing this, 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 and this behind the scenes, and that got you here, or that blessed somebody else, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Oh, that's so good. Like, again, like, we just can't confine God. Like, we might not ever in this life, like, fully understand, like, why He moves us in the places that He moves us, but I do, like, believe in, like, that, like, no time was wasted, you know? Even, like,
yeah.
if, like, God is, like, redirecting me to, like, a different place, like, God planned out all the days of my life in advance, you
yeah.
know? Like, knowing how I would use my free will. Like, I just truly, like, I'm like, I don't believe that God wastes a second of our lives.
Yeah.
You know, so that's...
Yeah, and even in those moments that you reflected on at the very beginning, for me, in my party era, that's something that I often, like, regret or feel so guilty about. And I remember one of my friends, Allie, had mentioned when she thinks back to her party days, literally, she'll say, like, I'm so grateful for that person because I wouldn't be who I am, like, without that time in my life.
Yeah.
And I think especially for you, as you do work with Jackson, with youth, like, your experiences are going to be so relatable for, like, so many young people and also so many people that you encounter in your life. And so even those moments that were really hard or very dark are also not wasted. And I think Psalm 139 says that, like, even the darkness is not dark to you. Like,
yeah.
even those dark places that are, like, hard and difficult to talk about, like, God knows all about them, and He's not afraid of them, and He can actually use them for, like, great things in our life.
Yeah.
So
that's so good.
There's like so many other things that I want to say. Like, we need to talk about your cute husband. We need an update on what your teaching path looks like. So I guess it'll just have to come back down the road.
I would love to come back, please. Oh my gosh, Susie, I just adore you. You're such a light about you. I'm like, I just giggle with you.
I think like half of this podcast is just us like laughing for no reason.
I know. I'm like, me talking about like super dark parts of my testimony, and I'm like, it's just not. That's why I'm like, I have to apologize, because I'm like, no, this is really heavy and it was really bad at the time. And I'm like, I don't know, maybe it's coping. I'm like, I love to giggle with you. So I'm like,
yeah,
it's just like, it's bubbling out of me.
I love it.
This is so joyful.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of the Quarter Life Queen podcast. Details about our guest, as well as any other information discussed in this episode, will be in the show notes below, so be sure to check it out. And if you have any questions, requests, or anything at all, be sure to email quarterlifequeenpod@gmail.com. Thank you so much, and you'll hear from me in next week's episode.